for Every Man Radio. Welcome to Every Man Radio. This is your host, Chris Ponce, and I'm here with my co-host, Dustin Lujan. And we are going to tackle some significant foreign policy issues today. So as of right now, we've got this situation going on in the Crimean Peninsula in southern Ukraine, where, as you know, Russia has invaded and they have troops staged around in various military installations in the Crimean Peninsula. And as of right now, it seems as if the Ukraine is pretty much submitting to the will of Russia. And I think as of right now, it's not really clear what Putin's motives really are. I don't know, Dustin, what do you think? What do you think he's there for? What do you think his objective is?
I think he's there for his national interests. I think it's very evident that Russia has some strong interests and historical ties with Ukraine. And I think Putin understands that it's a very significant geopolitical move for him to ensure that the Ukrainian government remains sympathetic to Russia's interests. You know, as we were discussing before, it seems as if this is a battle to frame the issue. You know, whether the West is going to be able to frame the issue and therefore present their argument or their position as being just, or whether Russia is going to be able to frame the issue and show the rectitude of their position is the battle right now. Is the information, the disinformation that's coming out. So it's very hard to assess the reality of the situation from here.
Yeah, and you know, we read a very interesting Kissinger article this morning in the Washington Post, and you know, I was pretty impressed. I'm normally not a fan of his foreign policy perspectives. I do not like this idea that, you know, the West is de facto superior and ought to exert its hegemony over other countries. But I was impressed with his posture on how the West has not really developed any real foreign policy on this issue. They've been essentially demonizing Vladimir Putin. And, you know, we've heard, you know, this incessant rhetoric about Putin being a tyrant and a bully, you know, but I mean, I've heard reports of, you know, the Russians are wildly in support of Vladimir Putin's actions. And, you know, I've heard that, you know, they're experiencing some of the highest standards of living in Russia, you know, that living Russians today can attest to.
Yeah, the man has really risen the standard of living there and really gotten the economy up and going. They're the largest exporter of natural gas, supplying 60% of Ukraine and over 30% of all of Europe.
Yeah.
So we just need to be very clear that Russia is not Libya and it's not Iraq and it's not Egypt. This is a completely different situation as far as the way the West has to approach this situation.
And what's making this issue, I think, a little difficult, too, is, you know, our recent involvement in the Middle East is so different. Like, you bring up the point that Russia is not like Libya. You know, it's, you know, our involvement really in the Middle East is so different with what's going on in Russia. And you have to look at, you know, the regions as almost two different creatures. You know, the Middle East, you know, Northern Africa and, you know, Jordan, Syria, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, you know, those countries are dominated by religiosity. You know, they're dominated by, you know, a sort of cult-like following of the Prophet Muhammad and the texts of the Quran, and implementation of Sharia law is sort of their modus operandi. It's what their, you know, it's their method of creating their own hegemony in certain regions. And, you know, obviously there's various factions of Islam that, you know, war against one another. But, you know, just to be clear, there's no such thing, obviously, as a one-size-fits-all approach to dealing with foreign powers and foreign, you know, criminal organizations or foreign factions. But, you know, I think maybe one thing that we're going to see here in the coming months is, you know, just an inability, I think, in the West to conceptualize the differences between, you know, dealing with someone like Vladimir Putin, who is a Russian nationalist. You know, Liz Cheney made the claim the other day that she thinks that he's going to want to bring back the Soviet Union, which, in my opinion, is just frankly, that's just ignorance. You know, I mean, she has no evidence really to substantiate that claim. And I think really when you look at Vladimir Putin's track record and, you know, having been involved with the KGB, and then rising to power, being sort of he is a strong man, but, you know, I think he truly loves Russia. And I think this is what Ukraine really is all about, because, you know, Ukraine has a very long history of involvement. They're so intimately linked, those two countries. And I mean, you know, Nikita Khrushchev was actually a Ukrainian, and many Russian leaders or parliament members, have ties to the Ukraine. And, you know, Eastern Ukraine is, you know, most people there speak Russian, whereas the Western portion of the country, most people speak Ukrainian. But the fact of the matter is that Ukraine is very intimately connected with Russia, and Russia's leader is a nationalist. He's not driven by, you know, any sort of slavish adherence to religious doctrine like the factions in the Middle East are. And I think that's, we have to learn how to treat those different types of factions differently, you know, and we need to understand, I think, that, you know, Russia's claim to Ukraine is just, I think, as valid as the EU's.
Yeah, you know? And it goes to the heart of, you know, this idea of, you know, you have two, like you just discussed, the realities in Ukraine are that there's a very divergent loyalties.
Yeah.
And I mean, that goes to the heart of, you know, are these borders that are now Ukraine, you know, are they arbitrary? You know, do you basically have two different nations within this geographic defined country? Because today, the report came out that Crimea Parliament voted to join Russia so that eastern side, the peninsula of Crimea, wants to stay with Russia. And what was one of the couple of the points that Kissinger made for his solutions? He had a couple of solutions, and one of them was that he wanted the Ukrainian people to be able to determine for themselves freely their economic and political associations. So that potentially could be a problem if the country is so split.
Yeah.
In where their loyalties and where and with whom they want to associate. The East with Russia and the West with Europe.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think
he made a good point.
He did.
And if you take that in conjunction with his second point about, you know, stating that the Ukraine should not join NATO. And I actually find that surprising coming from Henry Kissinger, because, of the I think threads of Western supremacy that sort of run through his foreign policy rhetoric. But I think it's a good posture. And I think, you know,
but I think it could be duplicitous, because I think that it's naive to think that if Ukraine joins the European Union, that they will not join NATO.
Yeah.
I think about Poland. Poland joined NATO. Yeah. As soon as they affirmed their position to join the EU, they also joined NATO.
Yeah.
So I think that by saying, you know, obviously it's the right thing to say, well, let's let the Ukrainian people choose. Well, I mean, I thought 3 or 4 weeks ago, about a month ago, we all understood that the Ukrainian people had chosen.
Mm-hmm.
This was at least ostensibly a legitimately elected government.
Yeah.
That was ruling, and that there was order, and then it was, and there was this coup, this disruption,
mm-hmm.
And there were reports that came out yesterday that the shooters fired on both the protesters and the police. So we don't really know. And so if that's the case, then the current government that is now ruling Kiev could have actually fired on their own citizens. Russia's position is that, well, this coup was instigated by the West.
Yeah.
And if Russia has substantial evidence to believe that, when they know, and they know the West understands how critical geopolitically Ukraine is, because if Ukraine sides with Europe, and then subsequently follows to join NATO, mm-hmm. Ukraine becomes a very strategic location militarily for the West.
Yep.
Then they can use Ukraine build bases, or they Absolutely. Can have
and they're right there, there's the body of water just to the south of Russia. I mean, I'm sorry, of Ukraine. And, you know, you're exactly right. It's, you know, having the Black Sea right there, it is extremely advantageous to the West to have a Ukrainian sort of outpost.
Right. So we need to be clear here. I mean, we can say that, you know, Obama can say that from an international law standpoint, Russia's in the wrong.
Yeah.
But Russia's argument is that we have strong interests in this situation. Mm-hmm. And not to mention, we also want to be able to defend and protect Russian-speaking Ukrainians, even Russian citizens. So it's a very difficult situation to really understand, because there's so many different interests and the two sides are trying to frame the issue to support their position.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm looking at a tweet here from the State Department, and it was 20 minutes ago, saying that John Kerry made clear that the United States' commitment to Ukraine's sovereignty in the face of Russia's aggression, you know, and that, I think what you're talking about, you know, with this posturing by the West is, you know, this, I think, could be sort of a fallacious idea that we are actually standing up for the sovereignty of Ukraine, because I think that, you know, that is conditional.
Right.
You know, there's a contingency that, you know, we are standing with Ukraine's sovereignty, probably just to the extent that the Ukraine is willing to fall in line with the EU's economic and social policies, you know, and that's what I think is disgusting about this whole, you know, perspective from the West. You know, I was also looking at a tweet, you know, where the U.S. government is sending more warplanes to Eastern Europe.
Right.
To Poland, because we have an airfield in Poland. And
which Poland is now a part of NATO.
Yeah.
So Russia's fears are legitimate.
Yeah, they are legitimate. And it's disgusting to me that we're actually sending, we're upping, you know, troop levels. You know, it is to me, this is the real vileness of the West coming out. And it's basically, it's a propagandist, in my opinion, this is a propagandist rhetoric campaign to demonize Putin and to to try to show the world, and like you were saying, the West is trying to frame this issue as if Putin is this unruly aggressor who, you know, not a single shot has been fired
in Ukraine,
and people are accusing him of being like Hitler.
Right, there's a full list of people who think that Putin is the new Hitler, and at the top of the list is Hillary Clinton. Not surprising, John McCain and Lindsey Graham.
Those two are freaking Congress's junkyard dogs.
Those individuals would like nothing more than to see troops immobilized tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think if I'm Putin right now, I'm concerned,
dude,
because the argument is beginning to be.
It's mounting.
It is. And that's how it works in this country. You know, if they're starting to demonize Putin and equate him with Hitler.
Yeah.
And there was – so from the public opinion standpoint, if they can establish the idea of associating Putin with Hitler, then they can justify just about anything.
Yeah. And that's the West's M.O., you know, demonizing, and granted, some people, like, for example, Hitler was easily demonized, really. Right. His demon-like nature of his, arbitrary, tyrannical, you know, government, you know, it spoke for itself. In the West, it was purely convenient, you know, but we have to ask ourselves, you know, what is better for the Ukrainian people? Do they want, you know, do they want to become enslaved to this shipwreck of an EU economy and an EU currency?
Exactly.
Or do they want to come underneath the potential tyranny of Putin, which I think that is illusory. I think that the tyranny, quote unquote, of Putin is, you know, it doesn't surprise me. You're talking about Lindsey Graham, John McCain, Hillary Clinton. These people are, in my mind, these people are set on what I would call almost neo-colonialism. You know, I think that there's this subversive sort of colonial idea here wherein people think people that are involved in these, in the stratosphere of, you know, foreign policy and foreign relations, these people think that, you know, the West is best, and that's not to say that we don't do things that are, I think, you know, elevated or maybe, you know, our standard of living in the West isn't, and that's not to say that it's not better than most places in the world, but, you know, I just get tired of this rhetoric campaign of these people who want to, in my mind, subjugate peoples and nations and make them bow down to their will. Putin does not play by the rules of the West. He's a realist. He's a rogue.
Yeah.
You know, right. In their words, he's Russia, I think they would consider him a rogue state.
Well, in that Russia, you look at those rogue states from the perspective of the West, you have Russia, Iran, and China that are basically the largest impediments to the New World Order.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Ukraine, which could be now a potential new market for the big banks of Europe to now loan the Ukrainians money, and what Ukraine becomes another debtor
bond servant.
The huge banks.
Yeah, because Ukraine becomes their essentially. I think of the EU almost as creating all these serfs.
That's right.
Out of these nations,
which is controlled by these large banks.
Yeah, think about like how Ireland and Greece and Portugal, you know, have their economies have just, you know, become destitute because of these, you know, ridiculous and slovenly, lazy economic policies that do not encourage growth. And it really, truly, I think it's a clash between we have, you know, this blatantly socialist regime of the EU, and you have Russia that is honestly unpredictable, and not a lot of people really know how to classify Russia. They're ostensibly it's a republic, it's a democratic republic, But you don't know because Putin's won just about every election in the past,
right.
You know, 10 years. So, you know,
he's a popular guy.
He wins the popular vote every time. But, you know, I mean, and I think, and one point that I agree with from the Kissinger article is, you know, he made the statement that wise Ukrainian leaders, he made the statement that Ukraine should be free to create any government compatible with the expressed will of its people, its own people, and that wise Ukrainian leaders could opt for a policy of reconciliation between the various parts of their country. And he's talking about the East and the West and how the East is very pro-Russia and the West is pro-EU and Ukraine.
Let's be honest, though. I mean, that's a lot easier said than done.
It is.
I mean, and that's great from an idealistic point, yeah. But ascertaining the will of the people at this point,
yeah,
is very difficult.
And don't you get a sense from reading Kissinger's articles that he's almost kind of like this parent?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, he's kind of like this guy who like steps in and he's like, now, children.
Guys, I'm here.
Yeah.
Daddy's here. It's going to be okay.
Daddy's here. Now, children.
Yeah, that's right. And
I don't think Putin's shirtless horseback adventures are going to succumb to the will of Henry Kissinger.
Right. He hasn't been chomping at the bit waiting for Henry Kissinger's voice.
Yeah.
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 But no, I don't know how negotiable of an issue this is from the perspective of Russia.
Yeah.
And I think the United States, there's an article in the New York Times today about how the United States is seeing this as possibly a need to become more of an exporter or supplier of Europe's natural gas needs so that it's to weaken Russia's leverage. Because at this point, Russia could probably bring Europe to its knees without a shot fired. If Russia turns off the pipelines of gas, which supply 60% of Ukraine and about 30 to 40% of Europe, you literally bring Europe to its knees without even firing a shot. And it's arguable how much control Russia has over the United States economy. Yesterday there was an article with the parliament in Russia voted to potentially encourage Russians to drop United States bonds. We don't necessarily know how many bonds or how much in bonds Russians actually hold. But I am very convinced that Putin understands that if he continues to escalate a crisis and he is belligerent, if you will, he can cause grave havoc in the United States, in the stock market. So I think the United States is probably cautious of that. And maybe the whole reason they see this as an indispensable need to create more U.S. military hegemony in that region is because they want to secure the dollar. Russia threatened that they would begin to start selling their oil and natural gas in something other than the U.S. dollar.
Yeah.
And let's remember, it didn't work out very well for Saddam Hussein when he threatened to change the currency in which he was dealing his oil, because it wasn't long before what was it, the first division, mm-hmm. you told me,
yeah,
was rolling
first cab.
With blaring, was it, you say it was metal. Metallica?
Yeah.
Death metal, Kill 'Em All?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's. I think we should be aware that, you know, when we send our military overseas, when they roll in, you know what we greet them with? Death metal, Metallica, Kill 'Em All.
You know, I love metal, but I don't know what you're talking about.
That's not for me.
But well, I'm sure it's not for people who essentially live as if they're in the 7th century either.
Exactly. So. That was an affront.
It's probably very disconcerting.
Yes, it was. And rightfully so.
They probably thought they were being invaded by extraterrestrials.
Yeah, and you know, we can all learn some things from the 17th century.
No, 7th century.
Yeah, 17th is probably a...
Better century. But yeah, I mean, I think you make some good points, you know, and I think, you know, I'm just sick of this colonial, this neo subversive colonialism, You know, these postmoderns and these liberals love to sit around and talk about how terrible the colonial powers were. But they're doing essentially the same thing, in my mind, in with this Ukrainian situation, and trying to exert the Western hegemony over the Russian agenda. And that's all. That's all it is, you know. It's just a battle of wills.
That's exactly right. Do you think, you know what I'm beginning to think, is that international law is illusory?
It is.
It all comes down to national interest.
Well, if you know, what did Sun Tzu say about war?
It's all war is deception.
War is deception. I mean, in some ways, war is a... You know, it is a mechanism of international law.
It is, absolutely.
You know, I mean, because, you know...
And maybe the only real mechanism.
And war defines relationships between states.
Right.
War and the threat of war, you know, and this is what I'm getting at. You know, the United States sending warplanes to Poland, you know, to Putin, that looks like aggression. And, you know, for a man who is trying to... I think stand up for the interests of the Russians in Ukraine and to
and for his own and his own people.
Yeah, and to galvanize a peninsula or a country that has a long history of Russian connections to sort of try to reassert, you know, the Russian nationalistic agenda and themes in that country is not a bad thing, you know. Especially if the claims are true that the EU has been inciting civil unrest in Ukraine.
Right, that they instigated the coup and for the purpose of causing the disruption in that legitimately elected government.
Yeah. And then you got the...
But the EU, they're freedom lovers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They love... Yeah.
They're freedom lovers so long as you choose to be their debtor.
You choose to be their debtor, and as long as, you know, you can choose to be gay or abort your children.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What was that report you saw came out of Belgium? You said it. I thought I heard from Belgium, but something about how parents could not...
It was actually Sweden, people in Sweden and Norway are trying to not treat their children as their biological
gender
because they want to give them time to determine what their gender is. This is the fantasy. This is the
a travesty.
This is the chaos of the EU and these socialistic nations. This is pure chaos.
That is a recipe for social chaos.
Man, that idea is so devoid of truth or understanding or wisdom. I mean, you're right. That is a recipe for some very screwed up individuals, you know? And that's, you know, this kind of goes on a generational type basis. I mean, you know, different generations struggle through different, I think, external pressures. Like, you know, our parents, you know, they dealt with, you know, their parents coming home. Well, not necessarily coming home, but our parents, you know, they had to deal with parents who had been involved in, you know, the Korean War. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in some instances, you know, post-World War II,
some
Vietnam, you know, and I think there was a lot of civil unrest that, you know, kind of stemmed from those, from the, you know, the middle of the 20th century that, you know, our parents had to deal with. And then, you know, we have to deal with parents who had to deal with things. And so that creates, you know, issues and frustrations and complications. But there's nothing, I don't think there's anything really comparable to this twisted notion in these EU countries about, you know, gender and what it means to be a man or a woman. I mean, or that you can freely associate yourself with either one of those ideas of your own volition. I mean, we are talking about a hegemony in the EU that offers up zero acknowledgement of a higher truth.
Yeah.
We're talking about a positive law regime that offers up zero acknowledgement of natural law or the truth or an objective system of morals that is supposed to govern all human beings and their actions. We're dealing with a regime that wants to create its own law. It wants to create its own norms, as they call it.
It's a very humanistic society. Yeah.
And I do not blame Putin for not wanting to be involved with that, with this twisted, sickening EU crap.
Yeah, and from my understanding, I don't, at least, you know, all of the major decision and policy makers, you know, in Russia, the reasonable leaders, I don't think that any of them any longer are Marxists. I don't know that Marxism is even has much of an influence anymore in Russia.
Well, I do know that there's still a pretty strong Russian Communist Party. I'm not exactly sure how much affiliation there is between that organization and Vladimir Putin or his his parliament. But communism, I don't think is dead anywhere. I don't think Marx is like that. He's like that really disturbing cold that you just can't get rid of. It's like that virus that just doesn't seem to stop plaguing mankind.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and Ron Paul.
Good old Ron Paul.
His opinions on the situation, of course.
Let me guess. We should stay out of it.
We should stay out. That is always safe.
That's his foreign policy in a nutshell.
And as far as the United States giving a monetary aid to Ukraine,
that is twisted.
Yeah, he put it very simply. He said it's impossible. He said the United States does not have the money to do it.
You know, it's guys like Ron Paul, I think. And I think you might agree that, you know, it's better to err on the side of caution. And I think he's one of the few rational people
right
left.
Yeah, he shows, you know, there's wisdom in restraint. And, you know, in this situation, all the way on the other side of the globe, very much a regional conflict where there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of variables at play that make this situation particularly difficult. I agree. I think it's much more prudent for the United States to stay out. And it's kind of, I think Putin must see it as kind of laughable when the United States tells him that he needs to stay out of the affairs of Ukraine.
Yeah.
He said, you know, I'm sure he's just sitting there thinking, you know, I've watched your country depose several regimes in the last several years.
Regime change.
Yeah, I've watched you come in and militarily use your might to uproot and overturn.
Yeah.
Legitimately.
The frat brothers
seeking regime changes.
Bush and his affiliates.
And what's the only real answer for that or real reason? And it's just America said that they had some form of national interest in it.
Yeah.
So here's Putin saying, you know, Russia has a strong interest in this situation. It's our next door neighbor.
Yeah.
You know, just to compare it, you know, we would think if we thought that an enemy, we'll say China or North Korea, was trying to instigate trouble in Mexico, and was trying to overthrow the Mexican government to try to create a government,
pro-China government.
Yes, basically a satellite country to China, where they could manipulate the situation and potentially use. Yeah. We wouldn't allow that for a minute.
Yeah, and people, you know, the old adage, money talks.
Yeah,
you know that, and that's what the Ukrainian pro-EU Ukraine regime. You know, I can almost guarantee you that there's money on the line here. And if they submit to the will of the EU, I guarantee you there is a monetary incentive for them to break their affiliation with Russia.
Well, you know what? And Ukraine's being offered money from a lot of different directions right now. The EU's offering them like $15 billion.
Yeah,
I think they're offering $15 billion. Russia's offered money. The United States has offered money.
Well, part of the EU package, I think we're a part of that package, and I think $1 billion of that is supposed to come from us.
Right, it's $1 billion. So
it's a loan, and it's a loan guarantee. Ours is a loan guarantee, so it may not be part of the EU package. So it's not actual direct cash, but it's still a billion. It's still an appropriation of $1 billion.
Yes, and I think
$1 billion.
Right, and Ukraine needs to understand that none of these offers of money are without strings attached.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this isn't just out of the benevolence of any of these.
Benevolence
sides.
Doesn't exist.
No, yeah, you're right. This is
at least not
interest.
In our world leadership.
That's why when Kissinger says things like, you know, I really just want the Ukrainian people to be able to choose what form of government is most
conducive to their happiness.
That's what we're concerned about here. You know, if I'm Ukraine, I'm thinking, oh, let's look into the history of this man for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I don't think that is at all what is really going on behind the motives.
The dark cave of Kissinger's cranium.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Ukrainian probably should have sat in on some of the, foreign, what's the group that meets together?
Are you talking about the Council on Foreign?
Yeah, I'm talking about the Council on Foreign Relations. I'm sure that they've discussed this situation.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So Ron Paul says, you know, we should stay out.
Well, you know, there's a lot more to to talk about in the coming days, and we'll see how the situation unfolds. And you know, we can definitely come back to some of these issues and some of these articles, and we'll see how this situation develops. But as for now, thank you for tuning in to Everyman Radio. Thank you for downloading our podcast, and
you may want to tell him to follow you on Twitter.
Yeah,
Chris is a tweeter now.
I'm a tweeter. I found my tweeter skills. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do so. I am at, you can just type in @CDPONCE25. So Twitter @CDPONCE25. Thanks again for tuning in, and we will continue our discussion next week.